Hey guys, welcome back to another Living the Light podcast episode. And today, we are doing sermons this month. Sawyer should be coming out later this week, I hope, unless he just somehow releases his before mine. He's working on his now, should be, so I don't know. I don't know how long it's going to take me to get this up and going, but today, I'm going to try to do a sermon. I've never preached before. I'm not in Bible college or anything like that. And so, yeah, we're going to try our best shot here. So today my message is going to be on faith, your fear. A lot of people don't have the faith in God to stand up no matter the odds, no matter the consequences. They see something they don't like or they're afraid of, and they just back down. They don't believe that God can help them through this, or that God has a plan for them to go through this. And so I'm going to give three biblical examples of people having faith over fear, or faith in their fear. So today, the first message, first passage story I want to go over is Elijah against the prophets of Baal. Giving a little bit of backstory, the entire kingdom of Israel had been split in half between Israel and Judah, and every king that Israel had was followed in Jeroboam's footsteps, and they were just evil, and there are some more evil than others and stuff like that. There was only one king in that entire time that Israel was split, and the Israel segment, that they actually had somewhat of a good king. Even he wasn't perfect, though, because he still didn't completely get rid of the Baal worship. So, today, we're in the time of Ahab. I don't know the AD or the BC for it, but the year. So, at this time, they had been serving Baal and everything like that, and sometimes they'd go back to God, but then they just swing right back to Baal. And at this time as well, Jezebel and Ahab were on the throne. Jezebel had put out an order to kill all the prophets of God. And so they had scattered, and some had died, and some had went into hiding, and Elijah had been one of those who had went into hiding. After a nap and a snack, God had risen, once Elijah had risen, God had spoken to Elijah. I don't know if he sent him somewhere else first or something. I didn't think to read about that, but he told Elijah to go to Ahab, get this sorted out, because they had been bouncing back and forth, and they need to pick one, either God or Baal. They can't serve both, and who swings back and forth before both? So, in verse 1 of 1 Kings 18, he says, "Go and show yourself to Ahab." And so, Elijah goes over to the kingdom, the capital. I think it was in Tirzah at this time. And he goes up to King Ahab and declares that he's challenging the prophets of Baal. And so he asked that Ahab brings all the prophets of Baal, of Asherah, and those who he had at Jezebel's table to this mountain or hill where they will have a sacrificial challenge. They will, once they had gathered them there, Elijah said that they would both prepare the sacrifices, and whoever's God set the sacrifice on fire would be the true God, and so that way Israel could see and stop swinging back and forth between Baal and God, and be like, hey, if this is what you want, whoever's sacrifice lights on fire, this is the true God. So the entire morning the prophets of Baal had set up their sacrificing, they had prayed, they had done every sacrament or thing that they could do to try to get their God's attention to send fire down onto their sacrifice. Elijah just sat there watching the entire time, and eventually around noon, nothing had happened yet. It was just still sitting there. They were yelling, praying, doing whatever. And so Elijah started taunting them. He's just like, maybe your God's asleep. Maybe your God is just not paying attention. Maybe he doesn't care. And so they start cutting themselves, and they start doing all sorts of other things to try and get their God's attention to set their sacrifice on fire. After about another hour or two of that, I think it was afternoon when Elijah had taken his turn, he had asked that, here we go, verse 30 to 39. I'll read it all out. And Elijah said to all the people, come near unto me. And all the people came near to him, and he repaired the altar of the Lord that had been thrown down. Elijah took 12 stones, according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Jacob, to whom the Lord came, saying, Israel shall be your name. And with the stones he built, and the altar of the name of the Lord, and he made the trench about the altar, as great as would contain two shears, and he put the wood in order, and cut the bowl in pieces, and laid it on the wood. And he said, fill 4 jars with water, and pour it onto the burnt offering, and on the wood. And he said, do it a second time. And they did it a second time. And he said, do it a third time. And they did it a third time. And water ran down around the altar, filled the trench also with water. And the prophet came near and said, O Lord, God of Abraham, Isaac, Israel, let it be known that this day that you are the God in Israel, and that I am your servant, and I have done all these things at your word. Answer me, O Lord, answer me that this people may know that you, O Lord, are God. And you have turned their hearts back. Then the fire of the Lord came and consumed the burnt offering, and the wood, and the stones, and the dust, and licked up the water that was in the trench. And when all the people saw it, they fell on their faces and said, the Lord, he is God, the Lord, he is God. Now, the thing with this here, Elijah didn't 100% know what God was going to do. All he knew is that God told him to go, and so he went to Ahab. And he went and said, gather the prophets of Baal. Gather all the prophets, all your prophets, all your people that are religious leaders and everything, and just bring them to the mountain. And a bunch of other people came too, because they wanted to see what was going on. Even if it didn't, if this hadn't have gone the way Elijah thought it was going to go, and God didn't send down fire, Elijah could have just been killed there on the spot, because they were hunting down the prophets of God. I think while this is going on, right after this, Jezebel ends up getting killed or something like that. So that's why he doesn't end up dying or something. I don't know. But I can't remember. But this is just one example of having faith that God is with you, and just standing up and going for it, having faith over fear. Now, Elijah had God talking to him, and so some might say, oh, well, if he had God talking to him, that's how he had that kind of courage. How do you have that kind of courage otherwise? Well, let's move on to the story of Esther. The entire book, it's a short book, it's only like 5 chapters. Great story to read. One of my more favorite books in the Bible. And so, Esther walks into the king's court is the thing we're going to focus on, but I'll give a little bit of a brief overview of the book. First things first, God is not mentioned in the book of Esther at all. God's not like a word. There's, I think, only one verse where he's referenced, but it's not really like, I think it's the word fathers, like our father's people. And there's nothing that really relates to, well, that's the only thing that I think that relates to God. There are underlying things in the book, though, that point towards God being there. So at this time, Ahasuerus, or as historians know him as Xerxes the Great, ruled from India all the way to Ethiopia, which huge nation. That's like three different continents, I think, because I think they had parts of Greece in that too at that time. And so Esther had, well, there was a queen that had already been on the throne for that, for the king, but she had not come when the king had asked her to come to a party or something like that, and so, because she didn't want to be humiliated and stuff like that, and so she ended up getting her head cut off. So the way things were back then, if you didn't obey the king, you probably were gonna die. So they sent out onto the all the lands to find the prettiest woman out there. Esther happened to be picked. I think she was one of the few Jewish girls, if not the only one. And so Esther was picked as one of the contestants, I guess, is a good word for it. And she happened to be chosen out of those contestants to be the queen. And so she becomes queen. And a little bit with Mordecai's help and everything, who Mordecai is her cousin who raised her after she'd been orphaned. And so he's like a father figure to Esther. Now, I'm just covering like the brief overview of the thing, so I'm not gonna go into like every little story that's in Esther and everything. And so moving away from that real quick, we need to understand Haman. Haman was a prince who had been promoted above all other princes. And so he had this pride that he was better than everyone else, and that he was just greater than everyone and stuff. So the king had commanded that all should bow to him whenever he walked the streets and stuff like that. So Haman was a prideful man. And so when he had been promoted, he went out and everyone bowed, all the servants, all the guards, the people of the land. But he saw one man who didn't bow. It was Mordecai. Mordecai didn't bow because Mordecai was a Jew and he served the Lord. He would not bow to anyone but God. And so Mordecai got mad over one person not bowing. And so he goes home, complains to his wife. His wife says, "Well, why don't you just have him killed?" And he's like, "Well, how would I have him killed? He hasn't done anything wrong. And as far as he knows, there's nothing he can really do." The queen, not the queen, his wife tells him, "Well, you could just get his entire people killed. If he's a Jew, just kill the entire population of Jews." And so he figures out a way, and he goes into the king, and he says, in verse Esther 3, 8, and 9, "And Haman said unto the king, There is a certain people scattered abroad and dispersed among the people in all the provinces of thy kingdom, and their laws are diverse from all the people, neither keep they the king's laws. Therefore, it's not for the king's profit to suffer them. If it please the king, let it be written that they may be destroyed, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver to the hands of those who have the charge of the business, to bring it to the king's treasuries." The king, not knowing who he's referring to, but he doesn't care. He hears that someone's disobeying his laws and not obeying what he says are the rules, says, "All right, that's fine." Stamps the paper with his ring. And so that's the he sent so the order sent out to that all the Jews are going to be killed. Every single one of them. And that would include Esther as the queen. And so Mordecai hears about this and knows that as well, not really knows, but him and all the other Jews weep, and they start crying out because they are going to die. And so Esther hears about hears the weeping and sends one of her servants to go figure out what it is. Because in those days, the queen didn't know anything that went outside. She stayed in the castle. Whatever happened in the castle, that's basically all she knew. She didn't know any politics or any wars or anything that happened outside of the castle. She was just there to please the king. And so she sends her servant out to go figure out what's going on. Her servant goes and talks to Mordecai. And she sends... and after he talks to Mordecai, he comes back with a decree, that had been sent out, and with a message from Mordecai. And Mordecai, she's shocked, but Mordecai, in the message, it says that he charged her with fixing this, because she was really the only one who could do anything about it. And so he says that she has had to go before the king and try to get this reversed, or stopped, or annulled, or just stop the killing of the Jews, because she was one of them, and she'd end up being killed, too. And so, the problem that she had, why she was hesitant about it... sorry, I got the hiccups now. So why she was hesitant about it is because if she went out in front of the king, and the king did not raise his staff, then she would die. She would be just sent to the gallows instantly and killed. Because he didn't call for her, and he didn't want to talk to her, and she disrupted or disobeyed him and came in when she wasn't supposed to. And so, if he didn't hold out his gold scepter to her, she would just end up dying anyways. Now, she was afraid because she didn't want to end up dying, and no one in the castle really knew that she was really Jewish. At least, that's what I got from it. So, after a little bit of courage from Mordecai, and a little bit of talking back and forth, she ends up saying that she'll do it. And Mordecai and all the Jews, they pray, and they and so Mordecai and the Jews, they prayed, and they did sacrifices to God that he might protect her when she went in before the king. And now it came to pass on the this is Esther 5:1-3. Now it came to pass on the third day that Esther put her royal apparel and stood in the inner court of the king's house, over against the king's house, and the king sat upon her royal throne and the royal house, over against the gate of the house. And it was so that when the king saw Esther, the queen standing in the court, that she obtained favor in his sight. And the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. So Esther drew near and touched the scepter. Then the king said unto her, "What wilt the queen Esther, and what wilt thou, Queen Esther, and what is thy request? It shall be given to thee up unto half the kingdom." So right there, she could have just thrown it all away for half the kingdom if she wanted to. That's not what she ends up doing. But this is where my thing is. If the king hadn't held out his scepter, or if God hadn't been with her to, or just decided that she wasn't the one to save the Jews, then the king just didn't hold out his scepter. She could have died right there. She didn't know for sure that she was the one to go do it. She didn't know for sure that God was going to be with her or anything like that. She just had to take that step. And yeah, she had friends and family to back her up and say, "Hey, we're here. We're here for you, but you are the only one that can do this, and you're the only one that can go." And so she had faith that she would be protected, I think. Well, in my opinion, she had faith, because if you didn't have faith, why would you do that? Why would you step before that, walk into the king like that? And so, she ended up getting favor of the king, and she ended up saving the Jews in the end of the story. I encourage you guys to read that book, because it is an amazing book of the Bible. And I can't cover it all in one sermon, even though I tried to put as much of it in there as possible. Well, I didn't. I guess I just overviewed a lot of it, but yeah. So, and God doesn't work through. There's 3 points I want to pull out of this, and that's God is always there. God doesn't just work through miracles, and He shows His providence in the in this book. He may not be mentioned in the book at all, but He's still in there in many different ways. God is invisible and with you always, no matter where you are. And so the last story I wanted to go over is Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And this one is a very common one too, especially if you've gone to church for any length of time. So in this time, I think this was maybe little. This was before Esther. So in this time, the Israelites had been captured. They had been, this was definitely before the time. So they had been brought into the kingdom of Assyria, Babylonia. I think it was Babylon. And so yeah, it was Babylon, because the king, because this was Judah. Yeah, so they had three waves of people, I forget what it's called, just being taken from their land in Israel and brought throughout the lands of Babylon. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, along with Daniel and some others, had been chosen for special jobs of sorts. I don't remember exactly what it's called. But anyways, they had gone through these things, and they had gotten these positions as wise men, basically. And they had been living in Babylon for a bit of time now. And then out of after a bit, Nebuchadnezzar made a calf of gold that whenever the instruments sounded, that all were to bow and worship it, and any who didn't would die. They would be thrown into a fiery furnace to burn to death. Now, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, these weren't their original names. These are the names that the Babylonians gave them. There's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They were still loyal Jews. They didn't serve any other gods. I think a lot of the Jews at this time ended up like falling into other religions, and they intermarried and stuff like that. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were people who didn't, and since they were such high ranking, they were seen more. And so when the calf was made, and the horn, the cornet, and the trumpet were all sounded and stuff like that, just the instruments, there's like a couple different instruments, they didn't bow. And other wise men or princes saw this and reported back to the king. And they're like, hey, there's three guys, they won't bow, and they won't do as you said. And so Nebuchadnezzar goes unto them and says, hey, you will bow at the trumpet sound, or we will throw you in the fiery furnace. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said unto the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our God, whom we have served, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. That's Daniel 3:16 to 18, by the way. And just going over these verses here. That's Daniel 3:16 to 18, by the way. And so they basically were saying, we have faith that our God will protect us in here. But even if he doesn't, we will still serve him. It doesn't matter if we don't end up serving. Well, if we don't end up living, we'll serve him until the end. We wouldn't have done anything differently. They had faith in God that much that they were like, you know what? We have faith that we will make it through. But if even if we don't, we still would have served the Lord. It's not something we are willing to give. We are don't care what the punishment is. We don't care what we have to do. We will serve God. We won't disobey him, and we will follow him in every way we can. And so they throw them into the fiery furnace, and the three guards who threw them in there ended up being eaten alive by the flames and melted and burned instantly. They didn't make it out, but it was just that hot. And so when Nebuchadnezzar looked into the furnace in Daniel 25:26, he looked in and said, lo, I see four men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt, and the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spake, and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, ye servants of the Most High God, come forth and come hither. That Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth of the midst of the fire, and they came out fine, and they were afterwards they were promoted, and Nebuchadnezzar declared that no one should disrespect or disprove the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, which is the God we serve today. And I think that really was one of the main turning points for Nebuchadnezzar. Because this is in the story of Daniel, and later on, I think Nebuchadnezzar gets saved. But still, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, going back to topic, had faith that they would make it through. Even if they didn't, they still had faith that they would make it through. And so, sometimes, you don't have anyone to back you up. The only ones that they had to back up was each other. If they didn't have any other Jews or anyone backing them up, or anything like that, they just had each other to back them up. And even then, if you don't have anyone to back you up, still stand for God and do the right thing. Do what's right no matter what the consequences are. And it doesn't matter what the punishment is. Doesn't matter. As long as you're doing what's for the Lord will be with you. And he has a plan. And as long as you follow that, you should be good. You'll make it through. And so that's my message for the day. It's probably rough. I'm not much for speaking, but I'm trying. And so that's all I have for my sermon. I guess we will go into prayer. Dear God, I pray that you would just be with the people who are listening, just be with the message, Lord, that you would put have it reach out to people who need to hear it. I pray that you would be with my the people listening right now, Lord, that you would help them to stand during trials. Help them, help me and them just stand up when we need to and have the courage and just follow you no matter what the consequences are. Even if we do face persecution or and I know there's people around the world who have different things that they're dealing with, and some being persecuted, some being thrown in prison for stuff like this, Lord. But I pray that you might be with them to help them have the courage to keep speaking for you and standing up for what's right, Lord. Pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. And I will see you guys in 2025 after the New Year's. So I hope you guys enjoyed the sermon, learned something from it, got something from it. And yeah. Anyways, see you guys next month.